going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You know, we got a lot of guys grinding offensively. Gun there in the ninth inning, get a leadoff single, a hustle single. Westy, who's been, having a tough couple weeks, a triple off Lopey there in the right field corner, a great piece of hitting. Unfortunately, Rutch has a great piece of hitting and lines out. Guy makes a great play up the middle. So the breaks are kind of hard to come by right now a little bit. We can't feel sorry for ourselves. We just got to continue to play that way.
That was manager Brandon Hyde. Following the Orioles' loss last night, 4-3 to the Nats. O's 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position. 12 runners left on base. And we take up for Brandon Hyde a bit where, hey, this isn't his roster. He didn't assemble this roster. Who knows how much control he does have over the lineup. But the moral victory talk there is... This isn't 2019. This isn't the rebuild where you're dealing with quadruple A players. We don't need moral victory talk after another loss.
And these players have already been coddled and enabled and fed a lot of BS and told how great they are by the front office that doesn't know what it's doing. They don't need the field general now making excuses for them as well. They're facing a Nats team that has been god-awful for most of the year, that hadn't gotten a clutch hit in a week outside of James Wood, that had all kinds of issues. They're facing the worst bullpen in the major leagues, and it's not even close. And there's a lot of bad bullpens. And I don't want to hear about woulda, coulda, shouldas. When you had an embarrassing loss Sunday, a day off Monday, you came out flat and got absolutely embarrassed by these guys in the first game, and then you showed a little bit of life in the second game, and I'm supposed to give you smoochy boochies? Get that garbage out of here. I thought this was liftoff. It should be beneath all of us. The bottom line is they faced one of the most hittable garbage starters in Major League Baseball last night. And yeah, they ran his pitch count up. But when they needed somebody to move the chain, it didn't happen. And they still are a feast or famine offense. And they still generally don't score unless they hit home runs. And since July 1st of last season, okay, we're talking almost 4,000 plate appearances. Since July 1st of last season, with runners in scoring position, the Orioles are 27th in OPS, 24th in slug, 24th in home runs, 23rd in RBIs, and 25th in on-base percentage. This is not a blip. This is not bad luck. This is who they are. This is how they were built by a bunch of clowns.
And their numbers specifically this year with runners in scoring position, 25th in batting average, 22nd in on-base, 21st in OPS, all with runners in scoring position. And a number that we looked at last week during TMI about how this team just can't come from behind, they're still 28th in OPS when trailing in ball games.
When they score three runs or less, I ran those numbers last week, when they score three runs or less, going back to the start of last season, they're bottom three in Major League Baseball in win percentage. I mean, they're there with the White Sox and like the Twins. It's, again, it should be beneath them. It's embarrassing. It should be shameful, but I don't know that there's a lot of shame. Take runnings and scoring position out of the equation. Since July 1st last season, the Orioles have a 312 on base percentage. Okay, that's pathetic. That's 17th in baseball. It's pathetic. And they're 15th in OPS since last July. So, again, that's over a 100-game sample size. They're barely league average in OPS. This great lineup, this vaunted lineup, this hitting incubator where they turn everybody into a slugger. And, like, here's what's really grinding my gears these days. They preach that they're smarter than everybody else and they know when to call guys up. And we thought Adley should be here and we thought Gunnar should be here and we thought Gracian should be here. And they said, no, you don't know. We know better. And why did they say they know better?
Because when they come up, they're going to play. They're going to be ready.
They're going to be ready to play Major League Baseball, right? They're going to be ready to help our baseball team in real time, at the plate, and in the field. But we got the manager talking about, well, we can't get out of slumps because we're a bunch of babies and we're really young. And we don't know how to field our positions because when we don't hit and we're young, we also don't field. They couldn't turn Heston Kjerstad in 5 years into even a below-average Major League outfielder. They didn't take the time to try to turn Jackson Holliday into a second baseman, and he's still a ways away from being even a league-average second baseman. But we have to watch this slop every night. They sold us that we're going to have guys who know their strengths and weaknesses in the batter's box, who don't chase, who don't give away at-bats, and on-base percentage is going to be our lifeblood, and that's why we won't have slumps. And I just told you, since July 1st of last year, almost 4,000 plate appearances, they've got a 312 on-base percentage and one of the lowest walk rates in the league. So who's full of crap, me or them?
Well, and look at the big offseason acquisition that came up in a big-time spot with Tyler O'Neill last night, where the Orioles are trailing 3-1. O'Neill comes to the plate. There's one out. He hit a sack fly, but you look at O'Neill's...
He needs to get the hell out of the lineup.
You brought him in because he mashes lefties. And right now, he is 2-for-21 against left-handed pitching, 11 strikeouts. And it just... He's not producing.
He can't play baseball. He occasionally hits the ball hard. He's not a baseball player. He cannot move. He cannot run. He cannot play the outfield. He's supposedly the gold glove guy. They don't even dare put him in left field. They make Heston deal with that crap. Look, I'm going to let you in on a couple theories. They play, for a young team, they play listless, lifeless baseball. They were put together by a listless, lifeless GM. They never have a sense of urgency or any sort of gear to switch from third to fourth to fifth, like today matters more than yesterday, because the GM never thinks today matters. 2027, 2028, our long-term plans. That's all that ever matters. They take their cues from the people who decide how much they make and when they make it. And I'll let you in on another little secret. Does it seem like they play for themselves or they play for the team? Do they play for their stats or do they play for the team stats in these clutch situations? And if you're watching what I'm watching, which is they're trying to play for their stats, maybe that's because they know they'll never get paid here. So what I accumulate here will help me get paid somewhere else because we don't take care of our own. We keep kids in the AAA for 3 or 4 years because we don't have a plan for them. We let the baseball gods sort everything out and we don't pay anybody. We don't extend anybody. Hell, we don't even pay people multi-year deals from other organizations. So maybe that's why their at-bats don't look like some of these other teams' at-bats when everything's on the line. Because maybe there's not a real sense of I'm going to be an Oriole anytime past when my arbitration runs out. And I'll probably be traded before that.
We're going to get back into the Orioles next hour. We're going to get back into the Ravens draft at 3:30. Could the Ravens prioritize their secondary over pass rush if everything is equal at pick 27? But coming up next, it's League at Large, and it is the one and only Jason Lockenfora mock draft. What sticks out the most to me, Beltway Ben Hall? What are some betting angles that maybe Jason could give you an advantage with? We'll tell you next on The Fan.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
There are definitely multiple people out there every single year where you see mock draft 10.0, 12.0. Our buddy Ryan Wilson, but
he's probably got one for next year up already.
He does mock drafts in October, November. He's got like 50 of them, and we love Ryan.
Yes.
JLC, it's 1.0. You don't go beyond 1.0.
And we one and done, Bone.
Have it right here. It's available on the Washington Post if you want to read the breakdown of all 32 picks. But starting with the quarterbacks, because that's always the sexy position, Jason. And the over-under for quarterbacks at various odds makers are 2.5. You have 4 going in the first round. You have Cam Ward. First overall, of course.
And that's happening. I mean, yeah. That's not even up for debate.
Jackson Dart, 9th overall to the Saints.
Yeah.
Shedeur Sanders going to the Steelers at 21. And the Browns going back into the first round, trading with the Chiefs to get Jalen Milroe at 31.
Yeah. Look, multiple general managers and scouts are of the belief that Kellen Moore, the new head coach of the Saints and a quarterback guru slash play caller and former quarterback himself, is a Jackson Dart guy, and that the GM, Mickey Loomis, is sort of along for the ride and that they obviously need a quarterback. They need to sell tickets. They need to get relevant again. They need to have a face of the future. And for a long time through this process, I thought Shedeur Sanders wouldn't get past them. Nobody knows for sure, but based on what these people have told me, I'm rolling with that. And so I think they need to take a quarterback, and if Dart's their guy, so be it. Is that any different than their old buddy Sean Payton taking Bo Nix 12th or whatever last year when people said he wouldn't do it, and I said he would, and I had him taking him, and I was right. I also said Atlanta's very much in play for Penix, and I'm pretty sure that they're going to take him, and people said that was crazy, and Atlanta took Penix. I don't know certainly for sure that that's what the Saints are going to do, but that's my best guess. And in that scenario, based again on what I've heard from multiple decision makers, that while Pittsburgh has a lot of players they like in this draft, including a wide receiver from Ohio State and a D tackle from Oregon, among others, and that's we talked about Walter Nolan at the top of the show. That's another team that I think would love to get their hands on Walter Nolan. If Shedeur Sanders is there, I think Mike Tomlin goes to the Roonies and says, that's my quarterback. And then these same decision makers, a lot of them said they would be mildly surprised, but not shocked if 4 quarterbacks went in the first round. And I don't make too much of what people say, but that one clip of Andrew Berry talking about he thinks Jalen Milroe is as fast as Lamar Jackson, and there's a lot of people who think Jalen Milroe's natural running skills are so elite and that over time you can harness the accuracy. Josh Allen couldn't hit the broadside of a barn when he was at Wyoming, but you can't ingrain that athleticism and those athletic traits into him. So, yeah, I think the Browns would like to do something sexy. I think their owner would be really into them doing something tonight rather than just waiting and seeing if Milroe's there, you know, getting through the first round, and they just take him with the first pick on Friday. And I don't think you'd have to give Andy Reid much. Andy Reid's going to get the same player at the first pick of Friday that he was going to get, especially when you know the team you're trading with is taking a quarterback. So could Howie take your guy? Maybe. He's not going to take 2 or 3 of your guys. He's only allowed to pick once at 32. Maybe it's the Giants, and maybe they move up with the Ravens, and they get Milroe or I don't think you take Quinn Ewers that high or whoever. Maybe Jackson Dart doesn't go 9th overall, and he's the guy somebody trades for at the back end of the first round. But yes, I think there's absolutely 3, and 4 would not surprise me at all.
No Ken Wyman. Kenny is hosting the draft show with Vinny 8 to midnight. So Beltway Ben Hall is here to continue to grill you on the mock draft hot seat.
Grill me, Beltway Ben.
The Shedeur thing, getting back to that and quarterbacks, there have been some people today that have been saying that he could possibly fall to the first round, which I just don't see realistic. I don't see him getting past the Steelers as you have him going there, but even if he were to get to 22 or later, would you expect somebody to trade back in and take him?
I honestly think if he got to the Rams, Sean Payton would, Sean McVay would just take him. Like, I know people there who I trust, and they're like, we're not taking a, you know, we think we got two more years of Stafford. But like, if that kid was there, you went to the playoffs with your roster last year. You already have the youngest defense in the league that's only going to get better. Is there a corner that they would really like there? Or maybe even somebody for the front seven? But I would have a hard time him thinking, like, I could sit the kid for 2 years and just turn it over to him when Stafford retires and have him groomed to keep this thing going. I'd be really, really shocked if Shedeur Sanders was still up for grabs on Friday. Like, if the Cleveland Browns had a shot at Shedeur Sanders with pick 33, that would shock me way more than four quarterbacks and three running backs in the first round.
We've talked a lot about the safety position leading up to today. Nick Emmanuari out of Carolina, Malachi Starks out of Georgia. You have Emmanuari going to the Seahawks with former friend or friend Mike McDonald, head coach there now. But you have Malachi Starks at the Ravens at 27.
I do. And look, I also have the BC pass rusher available. I have Kenneth Grant available, who I didn't even have going in the first round. And if it broke anything close to the way I have it, there'd also be receivers there that they'd like. There'd be multiple offensive linemen. I think Starks checks a lot of boxes for them, and I think that they can take what they think is already a strength and make it an uber strength. And that's the kind of thing I think they like to do. And, you know, we're going to talk a little more in a minute. I can elaborate more on why I think Starks would be the pick. But I just think the way they view cultivatable secondary play and cultivatable pass rush are two different things.
Now, you have Will Johnson falling to the Vikings at 24. A few months ago, people were talking about him being early teens, mm-hmm. one of the top cornerbacks drafted. Why have you, you know, expected him to fall the way he has?
Well, for me, it's just more of, I don't think that because there's all these guys day two that people are just going to, like, move off of D tackles and pass rushers in day one. So if you really, like, I've got a real run on D tackles and edge through the teens into the 20s, right? So that's inherently pushing people down. Like, the first DB other than Travis Hunter I have off the board is Emmanuel. Some people don't think Emmanuel is going in the first round. They might be right. I think for the Seattle Seahawks, they're thinking that could be our Kyle Hamilton. The evaluators that I talked to, nobody was going to war for any of these corners. Like, nobody loved them. I had more people telling me I wouldn't take Barron in the first round, period, than I had telling me, yeah, Will Johnson to San Francisco at 11, where some people have him mocked, that they think that makes sense. Who knows? Maybe there end up being five or six of them who go. The over-under betting totals on corners this year are lower than I've seen in a long time. And I'm more inclined to think three corners go in the first round than six. And in a normal year, you'd get six.
Well, speaking of those over-unders, we know you love the over on the quarterbacks to go in the first round. Before we step out, any other best bets in terms of positions or maybe positions to a team, positions over-under, specific player?
I mean, I think Seattle to take a safety, there's still a lot of value there. I dabbled on Shamar Stewart to go in the top 10. Like, I didn't put a lot of money on it, but you can get a pretty good payoff still now for him to go. Like, nobody I talked to was sure that the Carolina Panthers wouldn't take him, that he wouldn't be the preferred edge to over Williams or the other Georgia kid or anybody else. You know, Emmanuari to be the second defensive back after Travis Hunter taken in the draft, like, that definitely interest me. I'm under 15 and a half offensive players in the first round. You know, Walter Nolan to be the second D tackle taken. That interests me.
At 3:45, so less than 20 minutes away, we're going to take your phone calls on the Ravens draft. Any one in particular you'd like to see them draft position-wise? What direction would you like to see Eric DaCosta go in? Hey, would you want to see Eric DaCosta trade up tonight? 410-583-1057. If you want to jump to the front of the line, now is your chance. But coming up next, if all things are equal, there's a pass rusher that the Ravens covet. He's there at pick 27. There's someone in the secondary that the Ravens covet. He's there at 27. Are they going to lean secondary? We'll tell you next.
Well, I'm confident, you know, fairly confident that our Darius will be back. I don't know that it affects our decision-making at the position at all. And I think it's a pretty deep safety crew, and it's, you know, obviously the top guys, but then there's maybe four or five or six guys that will probably be, you know, third, fourth, fifth round guys that are good players. I mean, this is a really nice pool of players to pick from. I think we definitely will look at that. I think we added the two young guys last year. Both guys play well for us on special teams, Bo and Sanusi. But, yeah, it's a good group of players this year. And again, a position, I mentioned corner, I would probably guess that of our 11 picks, at least one of those would be a safety.
That was Eric DaCosta at the Ravens draft luncheon last week, talking about our Darius Washington's contract status, which has since been resolved. He has signed the restricted free agent tender that the Ravens assigned him. But like Eric DaCosta said, that's not going to stop him from drafting a safety high, potentially, in the draft tonight. And we were just giving out some of your mock draft that got submitted today for the Washington Post, if you want to see all of it. But you have the Ravens selecting Malachi Starks with the 27th overall pick. And you said that in your mock, the Boston College pass rusher was available at the same time. So all things being equal, you think they go secondary?
Well, I just try to study sort of core philosophies, core tenets. Like, what do these guys really hang their hat on? And Eric's been on the job for a while now, and you knew that some stuff from Ozzie was going to carry over, but he's also done this long enough that he's starting to sort of build his own profile. And we can just go and look at the safety position from the rise of Ed Reed to the pursuits, and I would say in many cases over pursuits, to try to find somebody else to be 50% of Ed Reed, 60% of Ed Reed, like, because 60% of Ed Reed is pretty damn good. And the way that they've thrown draft capital and money for a team that doesn't like to spend a lot of money on outside players, they've been willing to chase the corpse of Earl Thomas, like Eric Weddle when he was no longer the physical athletic freak he once was. We can go and talk about Elam and stuff like that, that Eric would have been a big part of as a, you know, running their draft.
Marcus Williams.
And drafting Kyle Hamilton when you had Marcus Williams. And it just seems to me that as they've gone from coordinator to coordinator to coordinator, and now they've got a Pagano back who's run a lot of defenses over the years himself, but really at his heart can coach up a secondary like few people on this planet. And it's like, I get the sense from how they spend their money, from how they build their rosters, that they don't think they need to spend, and by spend I mean money or premium draft capital, on projectable pass rushers, because look what we've turned Kyle Van Noy into. Jadeveon Clowney, go look at his last five seasons. One sticks out above all the else. Where did that happen? People thought Justin Houston was dead. We brought him back to life kind of twice. Like, we let Judon go, even though we could have had him for the same money, because it's like, well, we could take a kid at the end of the first round or the second day, and he'll be something. Like, I just get the sense that they feel like they're willing to lean into putting uber assets into having the most shape-shifting, athletically dynamic secondary we can have. And you, those dudes have natural ball skills. They affect the ball in flight. They make it hard to throw the ball downfield on us. And that's going to help our pass rush. That's going to help us get people. I mean, they always stop the run. So that's going to get us into people in the second and long and third and long. And that's when guys like Van Noy and Owe and Robinson are good enough.
They have zigged where most other teams have zagged in that direction. I always go back to that 2014 playoff debacle against the Patriots where they were trotting out who knows what. Some random guy at the mall that you saw the other day, a corner, yeah. And they blew two 14-point leads. And from that moment on, they've always invested heavily in their secondary, especially so. But you look at the pass rush element, and they haven't paid for a pass rusher legit money since Suggs. That's been a while.
Yeah.
Since 2018, they have invested two draft picks in the first two rounds at edge. Adafe Owe and David Ajabo. That's it. Since 2018. So Eric's whole tenure as GM plus a year. But I wondered.
And even Owe, that one was like as overt and obvious as them taking a linebacker when they took Queen. Like, there were certain years where the whole thing was set. Like, Judon left. Yeah. We're not doing anything in free agency to replace him. We're going to get a pass rusher, a kid we think's going to be a pass rusher.
I will say this, and I agree with you, that they value secondary more than, I would say, any other team in football in terms of draft capital, in terms of big money that they dole out. And they're going to make Kyle Hamilton highest paid, whatever the heck you want to call him, safety hybrid player when he gets signed. But considering where this edge position is at moving forward, with Van Noy, Owe, Ajabo on expiring contracts, is this the year they take a swing in the first two rounds at an edge because of that?
I mean, look, I'm not going to tell you, like, if they take the kid from BC, I don't think anybody's going to be like, shocker!
No.
I mean, you're basically kind of trying to thread a needle here. They're going to have to take some projectable pass rush along the way. With 11 picks, I think they take more than one of them. I also wonder, and part of the reason I went Starks, and I'm not saying that Starks would be a replacement for Kyle Hamilton because they're different builds. Kyle Hamilton's a one of one. But like this whole like stinger thing with Kyle Hamilton, like I don't know. It gives me a little bit of pause. I'm not saying I'm not going to pay him. I might be careful about the way the guarantees are structured. But I'm just wondering, like, it seems like on a lot of nondescript hits, he's leaving with something that appears to be neck, shoulder, spine related. Like, it seems to happen a lot. I've put it in six packs at times, and then other people have also sort of noted it and put it in six packs coming off a game. Like, I'm a little, it seems to me like that happens to him on what would appear to be innocuous collisions quite a bit to me.
Ken always jokes and calls him Gumby, and you guys are right. And I was at the training camp practice where he went down, and you would have thought someone died in terms of the fan. You could hear a needle hit the turf. Everyone surrounding him. Harbs was going over to the tent. Lamar went over to the tent, likely. And then he ends up limping into the castle. But we've yet to... Knock on wood. We've yet to see him miss significant time. And maybe that's me looking at this glass half full. But he's still a very young football player. Now, if this happens to him when he's 31, 32, yeah, maybe he does miss time. But when he's, 24 years old right now, he bounces back quicker. But no, I think that concern's definitely valid.
Yeah, so I just wonder if that's another variable. Like, he's so important to us. Do we need to have multiple shape-shifting defenders in case we had to go without him for a period of time, but maybe we don't have to completely reconfigure our entire defensive identity because he's going to miss four games?
IA Hall of Famer Lucy Burge is going to be joining us at the top of the hour. She was on SNY, Jason. We got to ask
her. Seems like she's getting big time.
How's her juggling game improving? We'll get Lucy's thoughts on that. But coming up next, we're going to hear from you, Larry. I see you on hold. If you want to join us, now is your chance. 410-583-1057. Who do you want to see Eric DaCosta target tonight? What position do you want to see Eric DaCosta trade up? Would you be mad if he trades down? Mark Andrews, are you looking for that trade to happen tonight or tomorrow? 410-583-1057. We'll take your calls next. The draft is 7 days from last Thursday or tonight.
Well done.
However you want to look at it.
Crept right up on us. Can't believe it's here.
It crept right up on us, Jason.
It's the same weekend every year, but it's amazing how it just feels different to some people.
If Ken was here, he would have definitely said that a time or two today. And he probably will say it tonight. 3:49
in the p.m. Crept up on me.
Tonight at 8 o'clock, because Ken will be handling draft duties with Vinny. 8 to midnight. And hey, after BBT, Jim Hunter and I, we got the Fresh Take with Beltway Ben Hall and Cordell Woodland.
Fired
as
up for
well,
that.
So you want to listen to that. But we want to listen to you, the people, right now. 410-583-1057. We haven't heard from Trippy in a while, Jason. Trippy, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? You ain't hear my new name?
Trippy Lockenfora. I heard you're part of the family. Welcome. We got to go to Little Italy and break some bread or something.
Yeah, right. But I think with the draft, though, like, I feel like we can go out and get any cornerback, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like as long as that front four still be playing the same, like, I went to that game in Buffalo, and we got bullied.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I feel like it's going to be the same thing. If we can't get the pass rusher, it's going to be the same thing. So I'm looking at that dude. What's his name? Kenneth?
Grant?
Grant?
He's a run stuffer. I mean, they could take Grant. I'm not totally sold he's going in the first round because there isn't a whole lot of projectable pass rush, but that's a big young man. That's somebody who can push people around and play bully ball. Now, there's some other, you know.
I want to say one more thing after you're done, too. Go ahead.
I was going to say there's some other nose tackles that they could probably get way down the line that, again, what's the difference between those kids and this kid versus Starks and any other safety you could get versus Azarascu and any edge you could get in day two? That's the math they have to do at pick 27.
Right. I feel you on that one. But I just feel like if that front four don't get it together, it's going to be the same thing. I don't know.
Agreed.
I just fell in love with Grant, though. But another thing, I see the Ravens having a draft party tonight, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going. I'm going to be on my podcast tonight. You know, shout out to Zone 32 podcast. But
well done. You learned from Aloysius.
It's kind of crazy, right? Because I'm trying to figure out why the Ravens don't be having the draft party like they had. Remember, like, back in the day, they used to – well, I know back in the day when the draft used to be on Saturday, they used to have it, like, all day down.
Yes.
I remember going there
then
as a kid.
Then they to the Inner Harbor. Why they don't have it at the Inner Harbor no more? They keep running sell tickets for $25 and they sold out. Like, it don't make no sense, man.
I think the question might be, why don't we have an Inner Harbor anymore? What's at the Inner Harbor anymore?
I mean, yeah, but if they hook it up, though, that's why they got
to
hook it up.
They do have to hook it up.
Stuff around
there. All right,
Uncle Ruby. I'm sure Uncle Ruby's got a plan.
Larry is in Woodstock. Larry, you're on the phone.
Oh, boy. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Hey.
Look, you spent the money. You bring in Chuck Pagano. Absolutely love that move.
Yes.
With Chuck, I'm going to overload the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Hamilton is the best player on our defense.
Yeah.
And to bring him back to that star caliber that he was a previous year back, I'm spending that first pick on one of the top two safeties.
If I hear
I have
you.
To bump up five or six spots, go ahead and do it. I'd get the guy, put him back at safety, bail Hamilton out, bump him back up to where he can be. If we can get one of the top two safeties and get the kicker from Florida State, I am totally happy with this draft. And it wouldn't hurt if all them extra draft picks. If we get a bona fide blocking tight end, that frees up more of our other tight ends' duties. And if the Ravens want to wait till later in the start of the season and trade off Mark Andrews, I'm fine with that. We'll trade him for another veteran player from another team that's maybe a defensive end and not an old guy.
Hmm.
So, all right, guys.
All right, Larry. Good
I mean, usually it ends up in the NFL being for a draft pick because –
yeah, player.
You're
for
trading
player,
him
you
to.
Know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it does happen, but it's usually our draft bust for your draft bust, not like our Pro Bowl ish caliber vet for your Pro Bowl ish caliber vet. But it, I mean, you have to keep an open mind.
Rashawn is in Baltimore. What's up, Rashawn?
What's up, fellas? Good afternoon, man.
Hey. Happy draft day.
Fit me in. Yep, man. You know, Trippy Lock and Four pick up all the time, you know.
Yeah, I think it rolls right off the tongue. Like I said, I don't leave my house much, but I'll go to Little Italy with Trippy. I'll buy him some pasta.
Listen, My thing is this, man. You wouldn't get an expensive house, a nice house, and not get the best security system for it. So where I'm going at with this is you got, you know, the most highest paid, paid quarterback. Move up and get the best lineman. I mean, I know you just spent all this money on Ronnie Stanley, but, you know, he's not reliable. He could get hurt. Anything could happen. So move up and try to get the guy, Josh Simmons, from Ohio State, that tackle from Ohio State.
They might not have to move up to get him.
All right, Rashawn.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is this group of offensive linemen, it's not quite maybe as star-studded as some other ones, and a few are going to go in the top 10, and then, you know, a few more will go in the teens. I'd be really surprised if they traded up for an offensive lineman. That would shock me, but them taking an offensive lineman at 27 would not shock me.
Let's grab one more real quick. Maurice is in Baltimore. Maurice, you're on the fam.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Hey there.
What's going on?
I'm good. I got something to say about the Ravens, but I also want to have a little bit of time to backtrack to Monday because I tried to call in about the Mike Elias thing. But for the Ravens, I've been listening to Jason, and he's talking about those two safeties. I mean, I'll take either one, but the guy not Starks, but the other guy they were talking about is kind of comparable to Kyle Hamilton. And I could say I wouldn't mind having two of those types back there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kyle's more polished. This kid's probably got more natural sort of twitch. They both have long levers. They both have size. I mean, those two in the same secondary would be like and Chuck Pagano pulling the strings would be really interesting.
Yes, I would like to see that. And for the Mike Elias thing for Monday, Jason, you got a little age on you. I know you can kind of sort of relate to this.
Mm-hmm.
But remember back in the day, because Mike Elias, he doesn't have to shop at Neiman Marcus. He should at least shop at Macy's.
There you go.
But instead, he shops at Kmart.
Yeah.
And remember back in the day when you go to Kmart and you just see people walking around looking through stuff on the aisles?
Yes.
But they don't decide to start shopping until the blue light comes on?
I feel you completely. Yes. Yes.
He won't shop until the blue light comes on, and it's nothing there when the blue light comes on.
Let me put it to you another way. If we're going back in the day. He doesn't have to shop at White Marsh Mall, but he's at least got to shop at Golden Ring. Don't go to East Point. Now, I went to East Point a lot. I can say that as a sign of love.
Dude.
But if you're going to rank the old school malls.
Bro, I'm just saying East Point.
Golden Ring had more going for it than East Point. And when White Marsh was built, that was like Taj Mahal.
East Point, their laser tag, though.
Oh, no, I love I love it. But I'm talking about if you were going there to shop for, like, if you're going to shop for clothes or something high end.
Yeah. With all due respect,
all due respect, East Point probably wasn't the spot.
A million
that Kings Court in East Point Mall. I can't tell you how many $8 steaks I had there as a kid.
Nice.
Maybe it was even less than eight back then. It might have been $5.
Hey, White Marsh Mall as a kid, man. Oh, that was there all the time in high school. That was a place to be. Coming up next, Lucy Burge, IA Hall of Famer. What is going on?
Is it now fair to say SNY's Lucy Burge?
Lucy Burge, maybe. We'll get to the bottom of it on the other side.